Hey guys, I'm Lavetta.
I'm Miriam.
Welcome to Notorious Women Podcast, a comedy podcast about some of history's most notorious women. No, I don't think the Jim Jones Kool-Aid joke is too soon.
No,
I think that was
not.
What, like, okay. 40 years ago, 50 years ago now? Like
something maybe? Like that?
I think so. I don't think that's too soon.
You know, like, I watched a documentary on that at some point late at night to calm me down. I don't understand the logic behind it, but there it is. My husband's always like, seriously, are you going to watch this murder trial before bed? Yeah, I am.
I will say that cults scare the fuck out of me because I don't know. I think because it's almost like to me, people who are in a cult and who are brainwashed are like zombies because there's no reasoning with them. And I remember seeing the Jim Jones, one of many documentaries on that cult, and it always terrifies me, like more than like a horror movie. Like, so
it is like, it is very, very creepy. Like, it is very disconcerting how easily people can find them.
And how they'll like do anything. Like, I mean, if you guys have never heard of the Jim Jones, and that's where the reference of drink the Kool-Aid comes from, because they literally gave poison Kool-Aid to the members so they could kill themselves and murder other members. But then if people tried to leave, the cult members would like kill them. But so
it was bad. Like, it was
terrifying.
Very bad. Yeah.
So, I mean, as much as I love murder, I do not like cults for some reason. It's kind of like voodoo and I'll mess with fucking dolls. Nope.
You know what? I hear you.
I don't do the dolls. Mm-mm. Nope. I'm a very stereotypical black person. I'm definitely in the theater being like, hail to the doll. Nope.
You know I'm not. Lavetta, you know I'm like, oh, she's cute. Can I see? And you'd be like, Miriam, throw the doll on the ground and run.
The only doll that I could kind of watch is Chucky, because Chucky is camp. It's so campy and ridiculous. But even still, Chucky ain't staying in my house. Mm-mm, nope.
Chucky's terrifying.
Chucky's terrifying.
A voodoo
hilarious.
Doll, I'd probably be stupid enough to be like, oh, what's that?
No,
should we
don't
put on
touch
a new
it.
Dress? No,
nope.
Don't touch her.
No,
okay, you
no,
sure?
Don't touch it. Aww. Don't touch it.
She's looking at me funny. Why is she looking at me funny?
I mean, I think though, as much as I'm afraid of dolls and ghosts and voodoo and all that other stuff and cults, for some reason though, I love a notorious woman.
Yep.
Wasn't that smooth? Wasn't that smooth? My transition.
That was
You're welcome.
So good.
I know.
That was like natural and yet. To the point.
And then I called it out and ruined it. So.
Yeah. And then you called it out. So I don't know how many stars I'm going to give you for this, but
5 stars always.
5 stars.
Remember, guys, follow us
don't
on
forget.
All the things and review 5 stars. So which brings me to, I think we should get started.
Let's do it.
I believe I am first this week.
Sounds good.
And you know, again, as much as I'm a wuss and a, scaredy cat for horror and like a specific kind of horror film. Mm-hmm. I love a notorious woman who likes a killing.
Here we go.
So you're welcome. So
yes, murder it up. Let's go.
Murder it up. So my notorious woman this week is a woman by the name of Julia Tofana.
No idea.
Oh, good. Okay. Because I was like, oh my God, I hope she doesn't do this one.
I know. I don't even know who she is.
Now, Julia Tofana was Italian, so I'm going to be Julia Tofani. No, I'm not going to do that.
That was awkward. Okay.
listen, my Italian accent is just as good as Jared Leto's in that Gucci movie.
I mean, sure. I mean, I'll give you that, but I don't know. I don't know how you feel about it also.
Everybody in that movie, side note, everybody in that Gucci movie, if you want to cackle, watch the Gucci movie. Everybody has a different kind of Italian accent.
Lavetta, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm sorry. Literally. Shaky.
That's Jared Leto's accent. And then Lady Gaga's doing like an Italian vampire. I don't know.
I think I just said an Italian vampire.
No. It is Jared Leto. Every time you come on, he's like, Luigi. I'm like, oh my God.
It's my brother, Mario.
I love it.
Literally. We're racing like, cars.
You would be a winner, brothers. So it's terrible. So I won't do that. I'll try not to do that.
That's okay if you do that.
Oh my God.
Okay.
Julia Tofana, and Julia spelt with a G, was, and now, so for my story today, I researched a lot, but the main sources come from an article on sci-fi.com.
Okay.
Also an article from All That's Interesting, which is a wonderful website, and a Forgotten Lives video on YouTube. So Forgotten Lives is the name of the account on YouTube. So, those are, and then we have many other sources, but those are the main sources. So now Julia Tofana was alive in 17th century Italy.
Wow. Okay.
So as such, because it's that old, some of the stuff you have to take with a grain of salt.
Got it. Okay. Yeah.
So just remember that as I'm going along, that some of the stuff may or may not be accurate, or it may be conjecture, and some of the stuff is backed up by historians' research. So now, because it's 17th century, not a lot is kind of known about her background. But what is known is that it was believed that she was born around either between 1590s to early 1600s in Palermo, Sicily.
Oh.
Because now some sources say that her mother was a woman by the name of Tofania de Amado. But Tofania, some people think that may have just been one of her mentors. Instead of her mother, but it could be her mother. One of the reasons they think it may be her mother is because there was a practice in 17th century Italy and in Europe in general, but in Italy specifically, for Italian women to take their mother's last name and I mean mother's first name and make it their surname.
Oh.
So that is why it's believed Tofania de Amado was her mother, because she took the name Julia Tofana.
That tracks. I'll take it.
So that may or may not be the truth. Or it could be that it was sort of one of those like mentors or surrogate moms. Could it be that kind of thing? So
okay, yeah.
Now, whatever it's... And I'll tell you, it'll become clear why people think it doesn't really matter if it was her mother or just her mentor, because the women had a special connection through the deeds that they ended up doing. But I just want to put that out there, that she may or may not be her mother. But
all right.
But if that practice is true, that probably either was her mother or like what we say, her play mama, you know. So now growing up, Julia developed her skill in the art of medicines, herbs, and apothecary, which she did learn from, which Tofania de Amado was also known for. So again, that could be how they met. But, and again, this is a time where women were either born into aristocracy or had to figure out a way to make a living, because it's not like they could go and become a secretary. So because of the skills, Julia became a tradeswoman in the sale of cosmetics, either legit or in the black market.
Okay.
So, which helped her take care of herself, because, she became a widow pretty early in her life.
Okay.
Now in 1633, Tofania de Amado was, arrested and executed for the murder of her husband.
Whoa. Okay. Okay.
It was believed that she poisoned her husband. And so if she and Julia were close, after she was executed, D'Amato was executed, Julia picked up and escaped basically to Naples and then Rome. Eventually she landed in Rome, where she set up shop again and began working with a young woman by the name of Girolama Spada.
Okay.
So again, Tofania de Amado was executed for killing her husband in 1633. So shortly after that, Julia got up, because she was, and that is when she comes onto the historical record around that time, 1633. Okay. And that is, and she was an adult by that time. So that's
why
was
the guy like a place. Like, was he like a dick?
Probably.
Like, okay.
Yeah, probably. I mean,
probably. Yeah.
So, and that is why they sort of put her birth around 1590s to early 1600s, because by the time she comes onto the historical record in 1633, she was an adult by that time. So now she's in Rome. And like I said, she began working with a young woman who became her assistant, basically, Girolama Spada.
Okay.
Now, it's believed that either while she was back in Palermo or throughout her whole life, she always had a soft spot for women trapped in loveless, suffocating relationships or abusive relationships.
Okay.
But it is specifically known that after she came to Rome and started working with Spada, she started selling toxins, aka poison, for ladies who wanted to get out of an unacceptable arrangement or marriage.
Okay. Options.
Yeah. Options. Okay.
You know, so women did not have a lot of options historically.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. And so it's believed around this time that with the help of Spada and a Roman priest by the name of Father Girolamo of St. Agnes in Agone, a church in central Rome.
I could listen to you speak Italian all day. Go on.
My brother Luigi. So this is a priest whose brother was an apothecary. So it's believed that she got the toxins from Father Girolamo.
Okay, Father.
Who became her close confidant, and they all basically went into business together.
Okay.
So it's at this time that it's believed that Julia launched her historical and notorious underground vast ring of professional poisoners.
Wow. Okay, Julia.
And what's interesting and even more devious about it is that she set up basically a shop that sold women's cosmetics, but
damn.
In the shop was it would become a very famous poison used specifically for this service.
Wow. Okay.
Now context, like you mentioned about D'Amato, was her husband a dick? So context,
right. Yeah.
17th century Italy, men had unlimited power over women in their lives and over almost all women. So women had to endure untold abuse. And this included even, you know, noble women and well-off women, because if they have the misfortune of being sold off or married to a man who abused them,
she was stuck.
Yeah.
See, this is why women, it's some bullshit patriarchy. Okay, go on.
Yeah. This is why basically women had no standing in society and had few opportunities to better their situations. So they could marry in hope of having that their husbands treated them decently,
right.
Or they could remain single and rely on sex work to survive.
So it's all a bad thing. Like, it all sucks. Like,
yeah,
basically.
Now, they did have a third option.
Oh,
third option.
You talk to me.
They could become a widow.
Oh, no. Yes. Bye.
And that third option was the preferred choice of most women, but especially wealthier
yes.
women from
no,
the
that's
wealthy
the
class.
Like that Queen Charlotte scene, which will forever burn in my brain as one of the best moments in all
with
of television.
Lady Danbury? Yep.
Yes! Y'all, go watch at least that episode.
Yep.
When Lady Danbury is done doing her duty.
Yep.
And living her best life.
Living our best life. So even among the wealthier class, if women were lucky enough to have a spouse that didn't physically harm them on an ongoing basis, they still had to live with the belief in society that women were property and had no say so in the shape of their lives. So
yeah, that sucks.
Yeah. So the desire was freedom. Enter.
Yeah. All right.
Enter Julia Tofana with what would become famously, Acqua Tofana, which was a coveted face cream and or oil that came in a bottle or a powder case that often and it was labeled Manna of St. Nicholas.
appropriately named, yes.
It was sold as a treatment for blemishes.
Okay.
In these shops. Now, while the specific makeup of Acqua Tofana is not known, it did contain a mixture of lead, arsenic, and belladonna.
Ooh.
And it was odorless and tasteless.
Mm, delicious.
Basically, and also if a person would go into the shop or go into the stall or and look around at the various face creams and beauty things or whatever, it would say on the bottle that it had the same cosmetic ingredients as other cosmetics, you know?
Right.
So basically, and a woman could hide it on her nightstand and no one mm-hmm. would be the wiser. So it's not like she would keep it in the kitchen or anything like that. So basically it's like if you went to Sephora and bought Fenty Beauty Fat Water Tonic, like it's like a fat water toner.
The last time I bought makeup the year was 2022. So like, I don't know what you just said, but
that Fenty Beauty fat water is basically a toner, but it's a toner / serum. It's really good, I will say.
Oh, okay.
So basically if your husband looked at your, anybody looked at your thing, they'd be like, oh, it's just these silly women with their face creams and stuff. Right.
Yes.
So this is how it worked. Basically, the woman would give the first dose. It was usually diluted with some kind of liquid, and it would cause exhaustion and physical weakness.
Would she like make him tea or something?
Yes. Okay. Put it in tea, soup, whatever, because obviously woman get in the kitchen or have the servants do it.
She's where she belongs. Right.
The second dose. So it was designed to work in three doses. So the second dose would bring on stomach aches, vomiting.
Oh, no.
And diarrhea.
Oof. Awkward.
You know. The third or fourth dose would take care of the rest.
Damn. Okay.
And then the person, usually the man, would die. And back then, because, you know, they didn't understand toxicology, they didn't really understand how a lot of medical stuff worked, because it's 17th century, 1600s. So, you know, because it came on in stages, they would think, oh, they just got picked up something on the street, or they got pneumonia, or it could be typhoid, it could be whatever, right?
Right. I mean, like, they didn't have germ theory yet, right? Like,
exactly. So they would believe, so usually doctors or investigators or authorities would believe that the man had died of some unknown illness, because it happened to everybody, no matter what class you were or disease. And so it basically, but with the slow nature of things also, it made the man, often the man think of, oh, I need to get my business affairs in order. And then the wives would be there to exert some sort of influence on what that order would look like.
Let me help you, honey. Here, I'll write this down for you.
Yes.
My lady hand is working today. Okay.
Yes. So this worked like a charm. And because of that, Julia's business flourished and made her and her accomplices so rich, right?
Okay.
You know, again, she was smart because, you know, you have to be. She didn't sell to just anybody. So you couldn't just, you know, it's not like they had a snitch or like an undercover cop. It had to be clandestine. It had to be, you know, so no one would become the wiser. So according to historians, not only was this prevalent in Italy at the time, it was prevalent all over Europe in large European cities.
I'm sorry. Stop fucking with women and you won't die. Okay?
If you don't give people options, you know, and you know, and oftentimes, so like someone like Julia, who, you know, again, women didn't have, they couldn't become a secretary, have like a career, right?
Of course.
So
not.
Oftentimes it would be also, it would be obscured by either her selling business. Her business was like, she was an expert in like reading your palm or cards, astrology, or, you know, so it's sort of like, oh, you're making a living doing that. And like, that's a legitimate business. Even the noble people, you know, listen to psychics and things like that. So, but that's another way to sort of get the word out and find out new customers and also get the right word to the right customer, potential customer.
Right. Very clever. Tell me your innermost thoughts. You hate him that much? Oh, okay.
You know, and also it's a way for you to, for her to sort of scope out her and her cronies to sort of scope out who is the right person, right?
Right.
So it is, this is, again, and it wasn't just her and Spada, it was the priest, the doctors. It was,
okay.
Like, they were, it was like a well-oiled machine because it was making all of them rich.
Yeah. Okay.
So... Now
it sounds to me like the right people died. I'm just saying.
I mean,
you know.
So, now all of this was going well. So apparently, this lasted for about 20 years.
Oh my God! Not what I was expecting you to say. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it may have gone on for even longer, except that one customer.
Yeah.
Lost her motherfucking nerve. So this is why you got to be.
Yeah.
So according to the tale, a young woman, customer, she got the Aqua Tofana. She was planning her husband's demise. Mm-hmm. But after mixing a few of it into his soup, she panicked and began to beg him not to eat it.
Listen, it's just the first stage. Don't give him more and shut your mouth.
She panicked.
Snitches get stitches. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And because her husband most certainly deserved to die, he repaid her loyalty by beating her until she confessed to poisoning the food.
Yeah,
and then
okay.
he turned her into authorities tortured her.
Wow.
Until she gave up Julia Tofana.
I'm so sad. That's so sad.
Yeah. So Julia escaped to a local church because, again, it was a well-oiled machine for sanctuary. And
run, girl.
Now rumors started to spread about it, but she obviously had become very, very popular.
Yes.
You know, and sort of like a folk hero.
Yes.
But then the word got out, probably by authorities, probably by patriarchy, that she was poisoning the water supply. So,
but she wasn't. You she guys... Wasn't.
It's propaganda, and it worked. Yeah. So she was arrested. Now there's varying degree. There's varying reports on exactly what happened. Because, again, this is the 1600s in Italy.
Right.
So, and this is having to do with the women. So a lot of it could have been expunged from the historical record or, you know, for other reasons that I'll get to shortly. So they tortured her or they questioned her. And eventually it came out that authorities say that her and her network of people killed over 600.
What? Are you serious? Mm-hmm. I don't know why I'm laughing. I do. 600 fucking douchebags who deserved it is what I'm hearing. That's what I just heard. Because, like,
so,
you know what? Don't be a dick. Don't be a dick.
Now,
listen.
Obviously... It could be, I don't even think that's, even though 600 people is a lot, but like, I'm like, it's ancient times and over or like an 18 year period, you know, depending on like if some of them were poor. I definitely don't think it's 600 rich men because that would cause alarm.
That would cause alarm. Like, yeah, if you're like rich and have clout in society, like three of them, it would ring a bell, you know.
Yeah, you know, like if like hundreds of noblemen started dying, that would cause alarm. But I mean, and then some people say that they may have attributed to, you know, just of the time, like people got diseases back then a lot of times and died, and they attributed that to her. But it was a lot of men, and so that shows you how vast the network was. And so, if
listen,
that's true,
she's doing the work. Okay,
she's doing the work of angels. I'm just saying.
Yes.
Because I know for sure, I don't know if it was 600 men, but I know for damn sure there was at least 600 men who deserved to die.
Yeah. I mean,
in 1600 Italy, I definitely know that much.
Yeah, I've read enough about history to agree with you on that one. Yeah.
But I just love it. Julie's like, you got it. Like, what would a commercial be like? Your husband's a douche. Aqua Tofana. Your husband beats you every day. Aqua Tofana. Your husband had a baby, an outside baby on you. Mm-hmm. Aqua Tofana, bitches. Okay.
Listen, can you see it as like a perfume ad, you know, in black and white.
Yep.
Aqua Tofana, where you make the choices from now on, you know, or some shit.
Now,
I'm ready for that commercial.
No, of course, Julia was beloved by people, especially the women, both powerful and poor, who she helped. So again, right. There's some noble women she's helping too. So when the word got around that they arrested her, and again, it's varying, you know, reports, it's conflicting reports on if they tortured her or they just questioned her.
Right. Okay.
But she did have allies in high places. But the tricky part is you can't be too supportive publicly because people then start looking at, when did your husband die? Like,
yeah, but you know, you can like drop a key that she could pick up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, so it's because of her connections to some in the noble class that, again, there's conflicting reports on exactly what happened to her. One report is that she was eventually killed and hung, like the Amado.
Terrible.
Right. But she may have learned from that. And so another report is that when they were after her, she left, like she got out of Dodge.
Oh, I hope that's the one.
And so around this time, dozens of lower class women were definitely arrested and accused of murdering their husband. So there was some basically a purge. I think it was a purge of women, I think.
Ugh, of course it was. That's exactly what it was.
Yeah. And then Spada, because again, that one report was that she and Spada and some of her associates were hung. And then other reports are that she fled and went off to a nunnery and disappeared and died peacefully in her bed in 1651. And then Spada took over, you know, went sort of dark for a while. But because, again, it was high demand for the service.
Yes. What else are you going to do?
Yeah.
Fix the laws or give me the poison. I don't know what to tell you. That's on you.
Yeah. I mean, people are going to figure out a way to survive. So, and then that report is that she left, she escaped, and then Spada took over the operations until she was discovered in 1659.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's like, again, it's conflicting results, of conflicting stories, because again, this is from the 1600s. But whatever happened to Julia Tofana, eventually the historical record shows that so again, that's why it leans heavily that she escaped and Spada went on, because Spada was in the historical record after 1651 as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so, but again, she was eventually found out. Ugh. And she was imprisoned. But again, what is clear, even though the specific details of what happened to these women, what's clear is that enough people were not only invested in needing these services, but enough people were invested in the network to make this network possible.
Yeah.
You know, and it's often believed that a lot of this is obscure because, again, like not only the involvement, but the complicity of people, high ranking church officials and people of the noble class. So it was like a desire to kind of like sweep it under the rug.
Yeah.
And not really go into it. Hopefully it made a couple of men stop beating their wives. That might be helpful.
I hope so.
But whatever happened, what's always interesting is that Julia Tofana's legacy is that it's far reaching. You know what I mean? It's like it had some effect. Like the reveal of this network of people, because it's not just one crazy woman, right? Because they love to be like, oh, she's a witch. She's a, you know.
Oh, they loved that word back then. Yeah,
they loved that word. Right? She's just a witch because she was connected to priests, noble women, like, and probably other priests.
Like, what are you going to do? Take down the church? Is that what you want to do?
Exactly. Exactly. So now, after Tofana and Spada's reigns, however, the legend of Aqua Tofana became legendary and notorious throughout Western and Central Europe. And Aqua Tofana eventually became a catch-all phrase for all kinds of sudden and or mysterious death.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And in fact, when Mozart became ill in September of 1791, so now we're like, what, 30 years later? 30
years? I can't do math. 30 years later.
As he lay dying in his bed, he reportedly proclaimed, quote, "Someone has given me aqua tofana and calculated the precise time of my death," end quote. I mean, he was Austrian, so that's not how.
I mean,
Mozart definitely didn't sound like that, but.
No, he didn't.
For this podcast, he's Italian. He's like.
Okay. Okay.
Luigi Vodo. Yeah. Also, there was a scandal in Versailles between 1677 and 1682 when King Louis the 14th, because I that had sounds to read right. that, uh-huh. faced a series of murders by poisoning at his court. And it was called the scandal, called the Affair of the Poisons.
A lot of people
believe that aqua tofana was being used to poison people to get rid of, you know, rivals. But at the court, yeah. And so it ended in the expulsion of one of his most powerful royal, companions, a woman by the name of Madame de Montespan, and the execution of a powerful potion maker by the name of Madame Monavoisin.
Oh,
and that was attributed to aqua tofana, like that sort of like it's sort of like a scare, right? Like a poison scare.
Yeah,
because it's, you know, because it's too much work to actually just stop mistreating women and pass protection laws.
I mean,
laws.
Right? Let's just like shut it down. Like, yeah, let's like remind women of their place as opposed to giving them like two options in life.
Yeah, instead of
as opposed to zero.
Or maybe okay. a fourth option, because the first option was to either marry and risk being mistreated by your husband or becoming a sex worker, remaining single, becoming a sex worker, mm-hmm. or poison. So maybe a fourth option, like no. laws that, you know, if her husband's mistreating her, she can get a
Leave.
Divorce. Like maybe a fourth option is good. I mean,
yeah.
But that is the story of Giulia Tofana, a.k.a. the Queen of Poison and the Queen of Aqua Tofana.
That is an amazing story.
Isn't that crazy?
That's insane. I love it. Why aren't we teaching this to all of the children? This is what happens when society becomes too unfair. You know,
yeah, you know, that is what I saw it as. It's basically a cautionary tale.
It is.
Of what will happen if you take away women's options.
Uh-huh. We're going to do something about it, but you might not like it. So give us
you
our
might
options.
Not like it. I just love that it was like she like one of her main co-conspirators was a priest. Like, I got you.
And
you
I
need
love
some
that,
toxins? Yeah. I got you, girl.
Let's make that money. Okay, that's fine.
Let's make that money.
Oh, my God. That so, was amazing. All
thank
right.
you. Who's your notorious woman this week?
Okay, so my notorious woman. So before I forget, I wanted to mention, this. Is, I wrote this down, someone on our Instagram, Snowvamp Me. I love her. She's awesome. We were talking about Google last mm-hmm. week, a couple weeks ago. I don't remember who is time. I don't know her. And
don't
how
know her.
You can look things up. Stop taking things at their word. Look it up. Google it. But mm-hmm. she did point. She's like, you got to remind people to check multiple sources and not just like
yes.
look for your answer and go with that. Because a lot of times, yeah, you got to look at. She was totally right. I was like, oh, my God, that is a good point. Check the validity of the website, where you're getting it, and check in a couple of different ways. So,
yeah, she's right yeah. about that, and I agree completely. But I would also say that people aren't Googling the first source. People are literally on the internet yeah. being like, I didn't know LL Cool J was a rapper. Are you fucking
yeah.
kidding
That
me?
Breaks my heart. I don't understand.
But she's right. She's right. Yeah. But I yeah. would say people, when I say Google, people don't even Google the first thing. Like
that's true. That's true. Yeah. But sometimes they're Googling that thing,
yeah.
that conspiracy theory that they want to believe.
Yeah.
And they Google it once. And then they're like, see, it's here. And then you're
very
like,
true.
www.conspiracytheoriesilove.coFPIONG. dot calm. You know, like I just made those up. Don't try to decipher what it is I said. That was out of nowhere.
Oh, it's on trolldumbass.com. Yeah. And they're like, see, it's right here.
Right. Right. I'm an assholebro.com/edu. I found it.
I mean, we're only kind of kidding, but she's absolutely right. I absolutely agree with that.
I was like, oh, we should say something. That is a good
absolutely
point.
That's why we have multiple sources here. And we always say take, because again, we're hashtag non-historians, but we always go to multiple sources to make sure that, you know, and we still get it wrong. You know, there's still
things have gotten it wrong. And like, honestly, that's why we're always like, let us know, DM us, email us. Like, we will always, like, if we're off or we miss something, for example, we were off about suggesting to Google without also mentioning you should find many sources. So yeah, that is true.
Yes. And we all, and that's why we always say, this is what we found. Again, this is a comedy podcast. So definitely if this sounds interesting to you, go and find out even more information. Cause usually there's too much information about something.
Honestly, that's usually the issue. So we often probably leave things out. We try to round it out. So today I'm going to talk about a woman. So Janie Jones DM'd us and suggested the theme of Victorian women who broke some rules, or maybe just like tore down some walls to become doctors.
I love and that. So you mean with her lady brain? With
I
lady
know.
Brains?
Do you like and no. their breasts and vaginas? I know, right? It's crazy.
Or lady parts or lady things, lady cells, something.
So I know, like, oh, so female. I don't understand how.
Female feelings? What? What is going on?
That's all females have are feelings, but brains? No. The vapors. Right, exactly. It's just to be pretty. All right. So I went down very many rabbit holes and I found a lot of really cool women. And it was actually really hard to decide. I chose Elizabeth Blackwell because I felt like she was, from what I gather, truly one of the very first. Also, she has some problematic moments, and I love discussing problematic moments.
Oh, yeah.
So that is who I'm going to talk about, and I already told you what she did. So
Elizabeth Blackwell, okay.
Yes. Who very white with an H, white. She was born February 3rd, 1821, in Bristol, England. She was one of many siblings. She had two older, Anna and Marion, and then four younger. Her father was a sugar refiner. And in 1832, they emigrated from Bristol, England to New York because he had lost their most profitable sugar refinery in a fire.
Oh.
Yeah. And in those days, it was like, I don't know, suck it up.
Yeah, basically.
Who's insurance? I don't know her. So when they were in New York, her father became active in abolitionist work. So they would talk. So she grew up in a household that, discussed women's rights and slavery and child labor. And they tended towards, you know, the correct side of things towards it, you know, not all the way there. It's based on what I discover later, but you know, in general, slavery, bad, child labor, bad, women should have some rights.
The basics.
Yeah, exactly. Square like one, I think.
Yeah.
But I thought this was funny that an example of their liberal point of view was rather than beating the children for bad behavior, her mother would record their trespasses in a black book. If the offenses accumulated, the children would be exiled to the attic during dinner. So that's.
Oh.
That's when they were nice. That's like a nice thing. That's like better than like, I guess beating within an inch of your life is bad. That's worse. But like,
so they sent them to bed without dinner?
In the attic.
I mean,
in the attic.
That's well, I guess, you know, honestly, maybe they didn't have multiple rooms with our modern sensibility. So it's like,
The attic. Come on.
Well, I mean,
I'm being nice. Go to the attic. What?
That is punishment because, you know, there's probably bugs punishment. Up there. Yeah. Maybe a bat, you know.
Probably like, dark, you know. Yep. I mean, it's 1840, 35,
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah, the attic would be like prison.
You're so. Not. Yeah, it's prison. Like, but he also, he did believe that all children, including his girls, should be given every opportunity to develop their talents and their gifts.
Oh, okay.
He paid for a governess and private tutors, and she as a result, she was socially isolated from like everyone but her family because no one else in her world was allowed this as a girl.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's a shame. Yeah.
So they then moved from New York to Cincinnati a few years later, and when she was 17, her father died, leaving the family with very little money. So her and her sisters, Anna and Marion, decided to start a school. Now, the school was not like progressive and great. This is not a story about that school. It was like there to make the money. It was called the Cincinnati English and French Academy for Young Ladies. But then she got inspired by the concept of transcendentalism and got all into that. Well, parents of the kids in the school found out about that, and that was just not okay for these white ladies. So they pulled their children out, and then the academy stopped making money.
Huh.
Right. That sounds right. Right? Yeah,
that tracks.
So in 1844, her sister Anna, I don't know. It used to be Anna, and then Frozen happened, and now it's Anna, and I don't know what to say. But I can spell it. Got her a teaching job that paid her $1,000 a year in Henderson, Kentucky. Now, she was raised to dislike slavery, to fight for women's rights, so in Henderson, Kentucky, she saw it firsthand and was outraged, right? I mean, that feels like bare minimum. Yeah.
Yeah.
She quote her, "Kind as the people were to me personally, the sense of justice was continually outraged. And at the end of the first term of engagement, I resigned the situation." So after that, she was like, "No, I don't like it." Came back to Cincinnati.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, she found another job through her sister, Anna.
That's a good sister.
Is she getting commission? I'm just, is she, like, what is happening? I feel like we're missing something. Her sister.
I mean, she's doing what sisters are supposed to do, I think. Good
like,
sisters.
You have brothers. Did they get you jobs? My brother did not get me a job. No. Maybe some, you know, advice that was did not pertain to my actual life, but, you know, he tried.
Exactly.
If he's ever listening to this, no offense, you tried. I love you. But you're not listening. I know that. So she got another job teaching in Asheville, North Carolina, teaching music. And her goal, she decided at this point, was to go to med school. And she wanted to somehow raise $3,000 for this. Now, she boarded with Reverend John Dixon. He had been a physician before he became a clergyman. And he approved of her career aspirations and let her use his medical books to study. So she also decided to start a slave Sunday school in Asheville, North Carolina. And it all I read was that it was unsuccessful. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, like it's 'cause I would imagine like slaves are like, "Who is this white lady?" And then
slave owners are like, "You're not teaching them to read or write, are you?"
Yeah, and it's also just like, "Who is this white lady?"
Yeah, exactly.
This Yankee.
Yeah, like, I think like everyone looks at her like, what are you doing? I'm like, join the abolitionists, you know what I mean? Like,
go.
I think the Underground Railroad was happening around now. We could use you there, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, she tried. She tried.
Oh, yeah. Right. I mean, you got to try. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So in 1846, she began teaching at a boarding school in Charleston. And she, while she was there, she was sending out letters looking for places to study medicine, but no dice because she is a woman and does have both breasts and a vagina. So she went to Philly and New York to check it out for herself. So in Philadelphia, she boarded with a Dr. William Elder and studied anatomy privately with Dr. Jonathan M. Allen. So most physicians were like, you can't study here, but maybe you go to Paris. Or they suggested taking up a disguise as a man to study medicine. So
somebody actually suggested that? Wow.
Yes. And they basically admitted that they had one of two thoughts, that they either they were, you know, her tiny lady brain was just could not handle the situation, or that it could handle the situation and then their penises would feel too small around her. So, you know, it's a problematic thing she's trying to do. Yeah.
Right. So okay. Crazy.
So in 1847, she was accepted to the Geneva Medical College in Geneva, New York. So here's how she got accepted. Ready?
Okay.
There's like usually a normal application process. You see your records and your schooling and all that, and they decide. Instead, they put the issue up to a vote by the 150 male students of the class with a stipulation that if one student objected, she would be turned away. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just one student has this all the power.
Listen, this is why they developed poisons. Okay?
well.
It makes sense.
Yep.
Fuckers. So they unanimously accepted her, mostly because they were curious and wanted to watch her fail. I'm sure there was some, like, not all men. Don't come at me. I know. I'm sure there was four of them that were nice. But, like, let's be real. Okay.
Yeah.
So, and she started school. She was looked at as an oddity. She also would not date anyone. She didn't want to be friends with anyone. She isolated herself completely. She stayed with Dr. Elder during, in the summer, and then applied for medical positions in the area to gain clinical experience. So then she joined the Guardians of the Poor, the city commission that ran the Blockley Almshouse, and they granted her permission to work there. I mean, it was still a struggle. She could work there, although some young resident physicians still refused to assist her in diagnosing and treating patients. So while she was there, she was appalled by the syphilitic ward and the condition of typhus patients. So her graduating thesis at Geneva Medical College was on the topic of typhus, and she concluded that there was a link with physical health and socio-moral stability. Mm. What? So you're saying if you have more money, your physical health can do better statistically? Interesting.
You don't we say.
We should maybe look into this matter further.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So on January 23rd, 1849, she became the first woman to earn a medical degree in the United States.
Wow.
And apparently upon her graduation, the dean, Dr. Charles Lee, conferred her degree and stood up and bowed to her. Okay.
Oh, okay.
I mean, calm down.
It's funny.
So in April 1849, she decided to continue her studies in Europe, first in Britain, then Paris. So in Europe, she was, surprise, rejected by many hospitals because of her sex. So the whole, like, go to Paris to study, I think that was just, like, hearsay. I don't think that it was better there necessarily. And she enrolled at La Maternité, which was, quote, a lying-in hospital. I assume this is, like, pregnant women. And only she was only accepted because she would be treated as a student midwife and not a physician. But By the end of the year, Paul Dubois, who was the foremost obstetrician in his day, had voiced his opinion that she would make the best obstetrician in the United States, male or female. Now, I just want to point out that women have been helping women have babies since the beginning of time.
I know, right?
Like, a man walking into that room is like 4 minutes old.
But as soon as they, but as soon as you professionalize something, then
yes,
suddenly women become unqualified.
It is, I mean, it, in the South, it was, I posted this on our Instagram because it is, I think from NPR, I don't remember. It was black women helped give birth, like throughout, like it was a family thing. It, they knew more than everybody, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not mad. I am though. Why? We need to, we're bringing it back.
Yeah.
We're bringing it back.
Oh my God. You're so funny.
All right, let's, I'll stop ranting for just like a moment, but I don't agree that I'm going to continue to stop ranting. So on November 4th, 1849, while she was treating an infant with an eye infection, she accidentally squirted some contaminated fluid into her own eye and she contracted the infection. She then lost sight in that left eye and had to have it surgically extracted.
No.
I know, right? So I know. She had hoped to become a surgeon, and this ended that dream.
Oh.
Now, she then enrolled, she recovered, enrolled in St. Bartholomew's Hospital in London in 1850. But then she felt that the prejudice against women in medicine was not as strong in the United States. So she returned to New York City in 1851. I know, right? I'm impressed.
Go figure.
Are we doing something right?
I know.
That feels wrong. So, but, you know, obviously that wasn't like fully true. She obviously faced sexism, but she did receive some support from media publications, including the New York Tribune. So she started her own practice, which floundered at first. A lot to do with a lot of women doctors around that time really meant that they were abortionists, if you will.
Oh, gotcha.
It was a whole thing. Now let's like thank the Lord and all of the gods for those women who probably saved countless lives.
Exactly.
But yeah, we like to judge the shit out of that.
Yeah.
So, okay. She founded the New York Dispensary for Poor Women and Children in 1853. In 1857, she opened the hospital under the name New York Infirmary for Indigent Women and Children. They accepted both in and out patients and served as a nurse's training facility. So in 1856, so she's never married, she's not dating, nothing. She adopted Catherine Kitty, they called her Kitty, Barry.
Oh.
She was an Irish orphan who was about 8 years old at the time. From the House of Refuge on Randall's Island. Diary entries indicate that she adopted her out of loneliness and a feeling of obligation, as well as out of a utilitarian need for domestic help. So,
no, she did not adopt a child.
She did.
Oh, so girl.
The child was brought up as a half-servant, half-daughter.
How does that even work?
You know, I don't. So like she provided her an education and she, here's how it works. So she instructed her in gymnastics as a trial for theories that she outlined, that she had outlined in her book. She wrote a book called The Laws of Life with Special Reference to the Physical Education of Girls.
Oh, so, problematic as fuck. Poor Kitty.
I know, but I mean,
poor baby.
She, I'm guessing the orphanage she was at was pretty terrible because,
well, yeah, like it's like either go off and have, hopefully she had her own room.
Yeah.
Be terrible with one person to be like, and then, you know, you risk illness when you're with a bunch of other kids.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She
who knows? She may have had more fun with the kids. Who knows?
Yeah, Hard, really
I watched
hard
Annie.
To tell.
I know how it works.
It's a hard knock life for her.
Mrs. Hannigan was awful, but at least she was with her buddies. Who knows?
I mean, it's true, but she ran away a lot.
I know it's true.
Also,
she was looking for Daddy Warbox.
She was looking for her mom and dad. She wanted to feel special. Listen, you did not say Annie. I watched it like every day as a child, okay? I can start the whole movie, and this is a whole podcast right now, is Miriam saying the whole movie.
But she was spunky. That's the most important thing about Annie.
I know, right?
Gonna come out tomorrow.
Okay.
We
no.
can't afford more than that, but yeah.
No. Also, those notes are really, really high. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Only a little kid could reach them.
Yeah, I couldn't do it as a little kid.
Me either.
I tried so hard. All right. So, also, she didn't let her develop her own interests and did not make any effort to introduce her to other kids of her age. As she got older, young men or women her age, and didn't want her to have, like, you know.
Poor kitty.
Yeah, I know, like a life. So, I will say she also, this is, okay, information I got. She stayed with her whole life. And on her deathbed in 1936, when Kitty passed, she called Blackwell her true love and requested that her ashes be buried with Elizabeth. So
here we are talking smack?
Well, you know,
or do
again,
you think it was like a matter of, what's the thing where?
Stockholm Syndrome.
Stockholm, yeah.
Yes, that's what I think it is. I also heard a thing that Stockholm Syndrome is not what we think it is, but I don't remember what it was, so I cannot speak on it.
But when we say Stockholm Syndrome, you guys know what we mean.
You know what I mean, exactly.
Yeah.
So, when the Civil War broke out in America, all the sisters aided in the nursing efforts. So she, Elizabeth, was very sympathetic with the North, and she even said that if the North had lost, she would have left the country. Obviously, she met with some resistance on the part of the male-dominated United States Sanitary Commission. They would not work with her. They would work with nurses, but not the Blackwells. So she organized the Women's Central Relief Association, which was ultimately absorbed by the USSC. But still, they did not like her. This woman who dared become a doctor, how dare she?
How dare she?
And then there was a clause in the Medical Act of 1858 in Britain that said doctors with foreign degrees practicing in Britain before 1858 could be recognized as a doctor. So she was the first woman to have her name entered on the General Medical Council's medical register in England.
Oh.
Oh, damn. Okay.
Okay.
So... in 1866, there's nearly 7,000 patients being treated at the New York Infirmary. She went back to the New York Infirmary to help it. She had a parallel project in Europe, but that collapsed. In 1868, a medical college for women became an adjunct to the infirmary and was established. It incorporated her innovative ideas about medical education, which meant a 4-year training period with much more extensive clinical training than previously required. So she was, I think, one of the ones to make medical training more complex. Mm. And then there was a rift between Emily and Elizabeth, her sister Emily. So Elizabeth felt slighted. I don't know what the rift was. It was over management always, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Business. So she left for Britain again. She's just going back and forth. You know what I'm saying? It was much cheaper, I suppose, to travel.
Even though it took forever, but I mean, sometimes you got to do what you got to do. Who knows?
So she went there in order to establish a medical education place for women. And in 1874, she established a women's medical school in London with Sophia Jex Blake. Now, I could go on and on about Sophia Jex Blake, who's fascinating in her own right. But all I want to say here is that they did not agree on a lot of things. Elizabeth took issue with some things, but I think Sophia was better received. And so in 1877, she officially retired from her medical career.
Okay.
So she viewed medicine as a means for social and moral reform. So, for example, her student, Mary Putnam Jacoby, focused on curing disease. Elizabeth felt that women would succeed in medicine because of their humane female values. Jacoby believed that women should participate as the equals of men in all medical specialties. So, as I said, you know, I might not agree with Elizabeth on all the things.
Right, right.
She was very active in social reform from 1880 to 1895. Now, here's what she was active in. Ready? Reform movements, okay? Mainly moral reform, right? Sexual purity, hygiene and medical education, but also preventative medicine, sanitation, eugenics, family planning, women's rights. What, Lovetta? What? Is there something?
You know.
What?
Eugenics, what, you know, I should have known when you got to like hygiene and moral, because that always, back then, for our listeners who don't know, that usually was a red flag for also a lot of Klanswomen or right wingers or racists would hide in like morality movements, cleanliness movements, eugenics.
Yeah, I'm just trying to make sure that the human race stays pure. What? For a woman who was so anti-slavery.
Oh, but like, see, that's what people don't realize.
Yes.
Abolitionists were against slavery. They didn't think black people were necessarily equal. They were just against slavery, which, you know what? As a black person and as a descendant of enslaved people, I will take it. Because, you know what?
Yep.
We need somebody fighting to end slavery. So I will take it. It's not enough, but I will take it.
Like, it's never going to be enough.
Nope. But so, I will take it.
You know, right. But like, let's not be like, thank you, white lady.
No. Nope. You got to play chess, baby. You got to play chess in America.
You know what?
Checkers.
It's not checkers. I don't care how much you love checkers, because so many people love checkers, but it's not checkers.
Nope, gotta play.
It's a complicated game of chess.
Yep.
So you know, and it's just so fascinating, like reading and researching her, there was like that twinge of like, there's something off, there's something wrong, and then you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, eugenics. That caught a lot of people up.
It sure did. It sure does. It sure did, and it still does. So she was really, really trying to fix the world, and her goal was evangelical moral perfection. I mean, cool. She believed that the Christian morality ought to play as large a role as scientific inquiry in medicine, and that medical schools ought to instruct students in the subject. She also didn't think you should get vaccines and thought those were dangerous. She believed that bacteria were not the only important cause of disease and felt their importance was being exaggerated. Okay. I'm trying not to laugh.
And this is a lady that was alive when everything was funky. Everything smelled like shit. Like literally. Yeah.
Okay. And she was like, don't wash your hands. It's fine.
Ew.
But then, I know this is long. I don't care because this is fascinating.
No. Do you?
Okay, she campaigned heavily against licentiousness, prostitution, contraceptives, arguing for the rhythm method. Yeah, so we knew.
Oh,
okay, here we are.
Not now, the rhythm method.
There she is again. She campaigned against the Contagious Diseases Act. Now, what was the Contagious Diseases Act?
Allowed
police officers to arrest women suspected of being prostitutes in certain ports and army towns. There was no set definition of prostitution within said act. So basically, any woman hanging out in those towns
would
be arrested. Yeah, this is real.
Seriously, they would like harass young some like young girls who are just minding their own business. Poor girls, black girls, just minding their own business. Be like, you're a prostitute, and they're like, we're just like hanging out, like with our friends.
Yeah, we're just here. My mother told me to come and sell my wares, whatever, to pick up the fish for dinner. Like,
what?
Wow. And then, this is more fun, when they were picked up, they were subjected to a compulsory physical examination. Yep. Uh-huh. And if she was declared to be infected, P.S., you can be infected by your husband, okay? Not that there's anything wrong with prostitution. We all know I'm fine with that. So,
but also, like, I'm just walking down the street. So this was the original stop and frisk.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. With, what like,
the fuck?
Yup.
Wow.
Now, if they found that you had an issue, rather than going to a doctor and getting you your antibiotics, right, they would be confined in what was known as a lock hospital until she recovered or her sentence was completed. Now, this is interesting. Men suspected of frequently, like, going to these places and these people, they
didn't have... What happened to them?
So what happened to them was absolutely nothing.
Nothing. Yeah.
Nothing. They were high-fiving.
Shocked. Yeah. I'm shocked, I tell you. I know.
No, I'm not shocked. But here's what I will say. And there was, like, a whole thing, right? She was against this act because she thought it was pseudo legislation of prostitution. So she her
she
problem
was
not
close.
I know. But here's the thing. It's just like, it's the slavery thing. Like, okay, but we shouldn't have this. So if she's fighting against it, well, that's good. Like, but for the very wrong reasons. Okay.
Okay. We're playing chess, not checkers.
Playing chess. Okay, girl, go fight them. Go fight them.
Yeah, let's do it.
She wrote a book in 1878 called Counsel to Parents on the Moral Education of Their Children. And this, she talked about the Contagious Diseases Act and how it was wrong. The book was controversial, but it was eventually printed. She did admit that women did have sexual urges, and that was shocking for the time.
Oh.
She was like, yeah, I mean, they do. But, like, here's what you have to do about that, right? Like, you still your responsibility.
Oh, okay.
So she never married. She did have one controversial moment with a man. This was interesting. So Alfred Sachs was 26 years old. Kitty, her adopted daughter-ish / slave, was 29 at the time. And everyone thought he was in it for Kitty, right? But no, they were like, he like loved her like so much. So Kitty felt uncomfortable being around them. So she was 55 at this time.
Oh, shit. She was a cougar.
Now, Kitty was in love with him, but Elizabeth wanted to reform him. So
I bet she did. She wanted to reform that dick.
You know, like, I almost hope so, you know. I almost, like, girl, guess some. Just guess some. You need a little, okay?
You know what this reminds me of? Have you seen Good Luck, Leo Grand with Emma Thompson?
I did.
Kind of reminds me of that character. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Yeah, she wanted to reform him, all right.
And I'm also curious about sexual urges.
I'm going to start referring to my prey as reforming them. Come here, baby. I want to reform you. Okay.
Yes. Come into my tutelage.
Mm-hmm. Let me reform that ass.
Okay.
Okay, now I'm just being a pervert.
But
you know what I mean.
You got to do what you got to do. I'm not here to judge.
Mm-hmm. Hey, reform that ass. Okay. he was an adult. So listen.
Yeah, he was a grown up to you. All I know is that once her book was published, they stopped speaking to each other. So,
oh, her and the guy?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, I know. Yeah. Ooh, I know, ooh. Right? And then in 1907, she was on holiday in Scotland, because when you're in England and on vacation, you say, I'm on holiday.
I'm on holiday.
I'm cultured like that. So that's why I know that. She fell down a flight of stairs.
Oh.
And it says was left almost completely mentally and physically disabled. But she lived for 3 more years. And on May 31st, 1910, she died at her home in Hastings, Sussex, after suffering a stroke that paralyzed half her body.
Oh. And
yeah. She went down hard, I would say.
Wow. Oh, my God. You sure right? Kitty didn't push her down? I'm just saying.
I'm not sure. Nothing. Okay. Because she must have been, you know, a little challenging to take care of. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, that's terrible.
I know, right? So she led quite a life.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. I did not expect that ending. Kind of speechless.
You're like, whoa, I don't know what to say. I know, right? It's so, she lived such an interesting, complicated life.
And yeah, I mean, yeah.
She opened doors up. So all these women, other women that I found that I like, I could talk about all of them. And many of these women, I should save it, but like they were dated each other. They, you know, were lesbians. Elizabeth like shut the whole thing down, but like, and it was acceptable. It's interesting. It's just such a bizarre.
Yeah, it's interesting how progressive, like, you know, our forefathers and foremothers were like in their attitudes, and then
but aspects of it. Yeah, so we still have ongoing slavery.
Yeah,
like, but yet it was okay that they were lesbians. No one cares. But it's like, yeah, but we can't call our society progressive, can we? You know.
Yeah, and then how she was like, well, women have urges, but they just have to beat it out of them, and then it's like, I want to become a doctor, go to medical school, and it's like, oh, but eugenics, and it's just like, oh, wow, yeah, but again, you know, for those of us who come after them, you have to play chess, instead of checkers, but wow, like, I did not expect that ending, though, man.
Oof, dark.
Falling down the stairs, I mean, because I'm that sounds like it was like, that sounds like you've been pushed down the stairs. Like,
I mean, I don't want to say Kitty was abused and was adopted to be her servant and therefore shoved her down the stairs. I don't want to say that because...
Well, was Kitty with her or was she just like...
Listen, I don't know.
Well, I'm just saying because it's like you said, oh, she fell down the stairs while she was on holiday. And usually that's like, oh, you fall and like maybe you sprain your leg or break, you know,
Which
is bad enough for your
arm.
But
it was like... mental and physical paralysis. What happened?
Like, that's like you fell, rolled down like two flights, and then fell onto something hard.
That's like movie magic falling. You know what I mean? Like no one would actually do that. But
Wow. So, well, I mean, thank you. So that's Elizabeth Blackwell. Wow.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that with us. And that will wrap it up for this episode of Notorious Women Podcast. Like I always say, like I'm saying now, and I always say every week, guys, remember to follow us on all the things. And also give us a 5-star review.
Yes, please.
And also share our podcast. Don't just tell your friends and family, share. Like copy the link wherever you listen to your podcast, copy the link. And text it and email it to your friends. So all they'll have to do is tap on it, tap on the link, tap on our logo, and
boom.
Go and become subscribers and download it. And don't forget to subscribe. And if you want to also, if you want to give us some like moolah, so you can, we can bring you more stories of murder and,
yes,
and medical
mayhem.
School, poisoning, you know, if you want to support us financially, you can also do that at patreon.com. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. I almost forgot. P-A-T-R-E-O-N.com/notorious women. And you can go there. Just give us a little moolah, a couple shekels, as they say. Our Jewish brothers and sisters say shekels.
We do.
You can do that for as little as $2 a month, or you can do a one-time donation. And we appreciate it because it will help us continue to be able to get together and bring you these shows. And Miriam, where else can they help out the show and follow us and send us messages?
So we have our Instagram page, which is super fun. Come join us. It is so easy. Notorious Women Podcast. It's us. You can DM us there. Also, we have an email. It's notoriouswmpod@gmail.com. If you have ideas, if you are like, that was totally wrong, here's what's right.
Right.
Let us know. We'll fix it on the next episode. Not a problem.
Yep.
And yeah, we'd love to hear from you.
Yes, we definitely would love to hear from you. And thank you for supporting us. Those of you who do listen and listen regularly, we really, really appreciate you. Tell your friends and your family because we're trying to get the word out. It helps us out. Leave a 5-star review. That definitely helps us out as well. And we will see you guys next week.
Yes, bye.
Bye-bye.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.